Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mike Chen, let's go. This hour being brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the number 4, KIDS. We're going to talk all White Sox in the 9 o'clock hour. We decided that we were going to block the hour. And wait, before you turn. Like, I don't want to hear about... Sure you do. Jim Thome went to the Hall of Fame. He played for the White Sox for 4 seasons. I saw Chuck Garfine's reports all weekend from Cooperstown. You can follow Chuck on Twitter at Chuck Garfine. He does White Sox pre and post on NBC Sports Chicago. He's an HF alum, which means he's pretty smart. He joins me now here on The Score. What's up, Chuck?
Was it smart of my parents to live in Flossmoor, or was it pure luck that I was drinking the water of Flossmoor and I became smart?
Well, I mean, the taxes in Flossmoor are pretty high. So maybe your family should have moved to Homewood, but yes, it was smart all the way around to have you there and be educated out there at a fine institution that understands how to grow broadcasters.
I agree.
So tell me about Cooperstown, because I've never been.
You've never been?
No. What's Cooperstown like?
Okay, well, the worst part about Cooperstown is getting to Cooperstown. It is near nothing. You have to fly to Albany, which is an hour and a half away, or Syracuse, which is about an hour and 45 minutes away. So that's the worst part about it. Once you get there, though, it is like a baseball mecca. It is a small town. It's a beautiful town. And it is, if you love baseball, it is the best place on earth when you consider that, like, you walk down Main Street and you feel like you're walking back in time, and all the stores are geared towards baseball. And... you know, a funny thing happened this year. I've been there 4 times, all connected with Jim Thome and Frank Thomas. And what happened this year was I show up there. There's a funny story about Ken Burns. Ken Burns, famous documentarian, one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, did the documentary about baseball. You saw that, didn't you?
I love it. I have the book.
So I pull into Cooperstown on Friday, and who was right there? One of the first people I see on Main Street, but Ken Burns. And he's eating ice cream with his kids or his grandkids. I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty, a nice slice of America right there. Ken Burns having ice cream. And then an hour later, we're leaving the area and we're driving by a hotel right off the main drag of Cooperstown. And who's there? It's Ken Burns. And he's playing kickball with his kids. I'm like, wow, he's playing kickball with his kids. And the next day, we drive by the hotel again. There is Ken Burns again, and he's playing wiffle ball with his kids. So I think what my point is, you kind of find your inner child when you go to Cooperstown, and you remember all of the times that you watched baseball as a kid, and you get really in touch with it. And even for someone like Ken Burns, who's got to be in his 60s right now, he felt like a little kid there this weekend.
I think that you've buried the lead. Chuck, I think what happened is that you just found out. You have empirical proof that in Cooperstown they are cloning Ken Burns.
That would be smart of them.
Because, I mean, think about it. If this were a sci-fi movie, wouldn't Cooperstown be the place where Ken Burns is being cloned?
Yes, it would.
I don't know.
I mean, because it is funny. Like, this town of 1,700 people becomes 60,000 people And I, for some reason, ran into Ken Burns three times within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. It's like Westworld up in there. All right. So you run into Ken Burns. What other cool things happened while you were in Cooperstown?
Wow, where to begin? Paul Konerko was there. He came with his son. And I did go to Jim Tomey's party that was on Saturday night. There was a big tent that they set up. The Indians actually held the party. Now, when Frank Thomas got in, the White Sox had a party for Frank. Because Tomey was on multiple teams, specifically the White Sox, Indians, and Phillies, and obviously he spent the most time with the Indians and he went in as an Indian, the Indians kind of ran that party and everyone was invited. And, you know, Jim obviously came in with his wife, and his agent was there, his longtime agent, the scout that found him was there, and some of his former teammates like Richie Sexson was there, and who else did I see? Nick Punto, Konerko, obviously, and so that was really cool. And then Jerry Reinsdorf was there, Kenny Williams, and actually I had a chance to interview all those guys about Jim, and you just saw the love for this very special player all weekend long. And what was funny, I wasn't going to report this, but then MLB.com writer. Anyway, he ended up reporting it, so I'm going to go ahead and say it. So Andrea Tomey told me that Jim was so meticulous about his speech that he was practicing it basically every day in his backyard in front of a hedge, as if the hedge was the podium. And he wanted to nail it. And on the surface, you think, why would Jim Tomey do this? But that was the kind of guy he was going into every game. He wanted to be prepared, and so prepared that when the game, you know, arrived, he was, you know, you're not going to be ready for everything when you play in a baseball game, but he wanted to be as prepared as possible. And he knew, you know, this is something that he can control. You can't control a baseball game. You can control your speech to a certain degree. You don't know what kind of emotions are going to come out, but he wanted to be able to be so prepared and so ready for this big moment that he practiced and practiced and practiced in front of a hedge for weeks, apparently.
Chuck Garfine of NBC Sports Chicago is joining me here as we're talking about the White Sox and Jim Tomey going to the Hall of Fame. Which part of his speech stuck with you?
Well, the one that stuck with me, and I was really fortunate that when he was traded to the White Sox in 06, we started talking about where he grew up in Peoria. And in 07, the winter of 07, I went down there with him, and we went to the place where he grew up. I mean, he gave us basically a tour of his childhood. We went to the house he grew up in. We went to the Little League baseball field that he played at. And that house where he grew up in, you know, he explained to me that the driveway had, when he grew up there, was a gravel driveway with a whole bunch of rocks. And he would take these rocks and would hit them constantly, every day, with an aluminum bat, and to the point where he would just hit them across the street. And seven times throughout his childhood, he broke windows in the garage across the street, and his dad had to go replace the windows in the garage of his neighbors because he was so obsessed with playing baseball. And many times his dad had to go to the store and buy more rocks to fill in the driveway at his house. I bring this up because that basically is how Jim started his speech, by saying that he used to hit rocks with an aluminum bat in his driveway. And, you know, going back to what I said about Ken Burns, like that inner baseball child of his that was, you know, instilled in him at a young age remained with him not only during his baseball career, but as he was giving his induction speech. A theme was that child, that dream that he had as a young kid, remained. And the fact that he was able to live out his dream and become a Hall of Famer, I mean, it was tough for him to comprehend then, and I'm sure even though it all happened, it's probably tough for him to even comprehend that this childhood dream came true.
Chuck, you did a lot of work in Cooperstown. I got to see a lot of it this weekend when I was watching games. Is there any more stuff that's going to air?
any more stuff that's going to air? Let me think. We put a lot of stuff out.
I know.
I did interview Ken Williams about the rebuild and about Moncada and Jimenez and Madrigal and all sorts of things and spending for the offseason. And we just put out an article that has most of that in there.
NBCSportsChicago.com if you want to hear it.
Yeah,
or read
yeah,
it.
Well, yeah. So I just recently tweeted the article that has most of it, and there I think we might put some video out of that. So there's that. I wonder if there's anything that we've forgotten or not have put out yet. That might be it. If you look at my Twitter feed, you're going to see. I mean, I've never tweeted so much about one person over a 3-day period in my life. There's a lot of Jim Tomey that's on my Twitter feed. If you want to check it out, it was an amazing weekend. A lot happened, and I was fortunate enough to have a relationship with Jim and his family over the course of the last 10 years, and a lot of it was able to kind of unfold in this pivotal weekend in their lives.
What was the conversation like, Kenny? There we go.
Yeah, there we go. He hasn't spoken much, you know, to reporters on the record in the last couple of years, and so it was a good opportunity to speak with him about this stuff. And I mean, do you want to pivot the conversation to Jimenez?
If I know that you want to pivot the conversation to Jimenez.
I got to be honest with you. I had a major faux pas on Twitter when I was just promoting that I was coming on here. And I said, Jimenez, I'm going to go on your show. We're going to talk about the White Sox, and Eloy Jimenez might come up. That's what I was thinking. Like
might come up as a topic, yes, not come up to the major leagues.
Exactly. I should have been a little more sensitive in my wording because people were thinking, wait, might come up. Like, he might be coming up, like, to the majors. So, that was a little faux pas on my part. I was not trying to be – I wasn't even trying to be humorous. I just made a mistake in my wording.
So, what is the latest that you can glean from the White Sox about Kopech and Jimenez?
All right, so they're saying that, and what Kenny said is that he's ready to be in the major leagues right now. He also said in this conversation that he thinks Dylan Cease could be in the majors right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they want Jimenez to work on things defensively, which is kind of like, I mean, you got Daniel Palka and Nicky Delmonico who are struggling defensively up here at times. Why can't Eloy Jimenez struggle defensively up here? But they are, looking, as Kenny put it, we are being double patient. That, we're not being patient, we're being doubly patient right now with these prospects because, they're looking at more than just the box score. They're looking at situations. They're looking at, especially with Kopech, they're looking at, okay, how is he going to do against a lineup of lefties like the Cleveland Indians have? And he wants Kopech to have some kind of experience, going into it so he's not blinded by it when he is presented with these situations next year whenever he's up here. And they have the luxury, right now to keep these guys in the minor leagues for, I shouldn't say as long as they want, but yeah, I guess as long as they want. But, they're not going to also get to the point where they're not being challenged whatsoever. I do feel like Eloy Jimenez is very, very, very close to getting that point where it's like it's beyond ridiculous. I mean, he's batting like 500 in his last 10 games. He had a home run here tonight. I don't know how much more he can learn offensively. He's ready. It's this whole defensive part where it's kind of like, well, what exactly? And by the way, if you guys want to know more and about what these guys are thinking, Rick Hahn is doing a special remote broadcast with us from Reggie's Bar on Thursday. You're all invited, 7 p.m. Get there at 6 o'clock if you want a spot, a real good spot. We're having a live White Sox Talk podcast with Rick on Q&A. You can ask him yourself.
I wanted to be – it's not a broadcast. It's a podcast.
The podcast.
Yeah, you got want to make sure that we're,
Did people, I say broadcast or podcast?
You said broadcast at
no,
first.
No, podcast. Podcast, my bad.
Well, you guys, this all stemmed from the karaoke night.
Yes. So we had – our very first remote podcast at Reggie's in the South Loop over the winter. Jason Benetti was our special guest, and there was that night live band karaoke after our podcast. And some employees of the White Sox were there, and they happened to show some videos. I don't know if they were the ones who shot the videos, but somehow videos got out that we were doing a little bit of live band karaoke on the stage. And then when I saw Rick Hahn at the winter meetings in December, he walks in the door for an interview I did with him, and he just said, listen, next time there is a podcast, a White Sox Talk podcast, where there is live karaoke, I want to be invited. Now, he didn't promise to be invited or to be included in the karaoke. He's to this day against doing any karaoke. He more wants to be on the podcast and talk White Sox with all of you and watch us go on stage and make fools of ourselves doing karaoke.
I think that's wonderful. Chuck, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much for being on the show. You're always great.
Thanks for having me on, Lawrence. Go Vikings.
Go Vikings is right. Football season is right around the corner. We need to take a break. More White Sox conversation. Our buddy James Fagan, I want to talk to him about Carlos Rodon. The guy's been money in the bank. Folks trying to trade him out of town. Get out of here with that, Nightingale. Back after this on The Score. We haven't really had a lot of time over the last couple of months to just kind of kick back and talk White Sox baseball, but considering Jim Thome going into the Hall of Fame, we thought that we would do a little bit of it. And the other thing is how well Carlos Rodon has pitched. Want to talk with James Fagan about it. I've been saying his name like they say it in the old country. Fagan. I feel like that's a really terrible Irish accent. That is appropriation. That is terrible. James Fagan covers the White Sox for The Athletic. He joins me now here on The Score. What's going on, James?
I am phoning back to the old country on another line to see what your punishment is going to be.
Yeah, there's going to be something bad because, I mean, that was awful. It was just terrible. All right, so let's talk about better things. Let's talk about Carlos Rodon. Why has he been so dominant his last few times out?
I would just say, I mean, it's the lamest answer I can give, but I would just say he's commanding well. You know, we've probably seen him tap into his top velocity band, like 96, 97, 98 a bit more. He's always been a guy who kind of ratchets up both over the course of the season and over the course of the game. So as he's pitched longer, he's kind of settled into that a bit more comfortably and shown the ability to rev up on that over the course of games. And, you know, he's really showing that, you know, he has the ability to go deep in the games and kind of command a slider deep in the game. So we've been seeing that a bit more. I mean, given it's probably the past 2 or 3 years, we've only seen him have, you know, this many healthy starts in a row where you can really start stringing together, you know, progress and developing from start to start so many times. So he's really getting that chance now and looks really to be all the way back. I know he had shoulder surgery, but it seems like his stuff has been all there ever since he came back.
I know pitcher health is a really difficult thing to predict, but do the White Sox feel like Rodon has gotten over all of the physical hurdles that he's had?
At the very least, they're treating him as such. They're giving him the same, like, you know, workhorse workloads of, you know, a lot. He's averaged 110 pitches for start this month. They're treating him like a guy who has absolutely no restrictions, which ultimately, if you have the operation and have trust in it and have trust in the rehab process, which they were very methodical about, eventually you got to start treating him like he has no restrictions. And so far, he's responding very well to it and showing the ability to hold his stuff throughout really heavy ace workloads throughout. So I would say they have confidence in it, or at least the way they're acting like a team that has confidence in it.
I struggle all year because, I mean, I tell people, look, a lot of this stuff doesn't matter with the White Sox this year as far as game in, game out. Looking at it, the micro level doesn't matter, but I was furious yesterday. And I get it. Soria's not on the team. It's hard to save the game. Ricky tried to let him go longer in the game. But I tell you, man, that was just like a gut punch where you're really enjoying the game. And then you're like, oh, yeah, the White Sox are bad. I forgot about that for 2.5 hours.
I mean, you know, if I was kind of managing it, I can't say I would deviate too much in the sense. Like, the only fix I could think of I would do is I'd come quicker with Fry, because that's, like, the guy I trust with strikeout stuff. And Fry didn't have his command and got lit up, like, instantly with his three batters. So I don't think my master plan would have worked either. They don't have just a ton of swing and miss, reliable, lights out, get out of a jam with by throwing heat and missing bats type of relievers in the pen anymore. they kind of got a lot of guys who really, you know, get ground balls and need clean innings to have success. So there's only so many, like, immediate fireman remedies that he has at his disposal before they do something like, I don't know, bring up Ian Hamilton from AAA because he's dominant down there. So I think that's about how some games are going to go as he tries to figure out what matchups or how he can tinker his way through the later innings are going to be, because they really just don't have anybody who's lights out in the bullpen anymore.
Why
at least not until Nate Jones come back, and you know that's not looking definite at all.
No, which is sad because he's been through so much already in his career. Why is James Shields still a White Sox?
I would say because he's kind of on the tier of, you know, moderate improving the back of your rotation improvement that could always happen in August. That I always saw it as a mirror of the Miguel Gonzalez situation, where just like some team was going to say, well, maybe it's not something that we're, you know, keen a major prospect over, or this is like deciding how hard we're going to go into the rotation, but we can improve our fifth or fourth starter for a seemingly negligible price to just, you know, take your pick of a prospect that we don't really see the path to the majors for anymore, like, you know, the Rangers did last year with Saquon Forbes, and that type of deal is going to go down. That's something that doesn't have the urgency of some of the major moves that teams are focusing on right now at the end of July. So I always thought that was something that could happen in August.
I remember Rick Hahn saying last year, and I've kept this in the back of my mind, that the luck that they had in all the moves that they made last year would at some point turn around, that they had, you know, no health issues for the most part. They seemed to win every trade if you were looking at it just on its face. And then a lot of injuries have happened this year. That thing that Rick was probably expecting started to happen. With that being said, how do you think that is kind of move back their target on when they expect to compete?
As far as like prospect injuries, I could see that having a little effect. As far as like trade shift injuries, I think they really like made all their big franchise transforming deals already. Like if you asked me at the start of last year, I'd have probably thought that, you know, with his contract, that Nate Jones is a really interesting piece, but I still don't think that's really robbed them of like a major, like, you know, core piece that they would have in a trade. Avi, even off his career year last year, wasn't, you know, drumming up that type of interest, and I really never thought they would trade for Abreu shop Abreu unless it was just insane, and that didn't seem likely. I can see the argument that just prospect injuries I would say that the underperformance from guys you thought were going to be mainstays or hit the ground running, like, say, Giolito or Lopez or Moncada, is probably what's pushing back 2019 not being as exciting or competitive as maybe you hoped, more than, you know, Luis Robert getting hurt.
Yeah, but some of this stuff is just baseball. Baseball's difficult. So why don't we start with Moncada? What things is he doing well? Where can he improve?
He can improve just on, I hate to be sound like an old grouchy guy, but like more consistent, fundamentally sound defense would be, you know, something that would probably shave his errors down and let, you know, his athletic plays like the one he made in the ninth inning, you know, yesterday shine and, you know, have people may pay more attention to it. As I've talked with, you know, Todd Stevenson a few times about now, he's got to just do a little bit more to keep himself alive. As much as you don't want to, like, you know, take away the patient eye he has and the consistent 10% walk rate he's had throughout his career, he's got to do a little bit as far as pitches on the edges to keep himself alive, because he's facing a level of pitchers that really can command those edges, and he's got to adapt to that more than he has the last, you know, 600 plate appearances at this point. Doing well, obviously, every time that the talent shines through, you know, it's very loud when it does. He still has elite bat speed. He still has, you know, pretty solid pop, from both sides of the plate. I mean, just a couple weeks ago for the All-Star break, he was choking up the bat pretty heavily on two strikes and hit a ball 400 feet out to center right-handed. So I really don't think he struggles with pop from right-handed as much as people think as far as raw tools. And every time, you know, he connects or connects anything solid, we kind of see what the fuss is about in a hurry. So that's something that's still present that hasn't depreciated over this year of, you know, bumps and bruises and rookie adjustments.
Lopez through the first with seven starts looked incredible. Since then, he's been up and down. What do the White Sox say about how he's pitching?
You know, the last start was really kind of weird. He didn't seem really, didn't have really the answers for it or the kind of upbeat mood that he usually does. Him and Rick Renneria talk about focus all the time and needing to concentrate, which is a really kind of vague and not very explanatory answer. So I don't know really what's going on with him. I mean, some of the issues that have happened with him are something that we could have been calling out as warning signs all season, the fact that he didn't miss spats or strikeouts that you would think of someone who's sitting 96 would. He doesn't kind of have the wiggle on his fastball to miss bats with it as consistently as you would like. And, you know, the walks have always been too high to really be sustainable. And he doesn't do himself a lot of favors by keeping the ball out of the air or getting ground balls. And that was always going to produce more homers down the road. So a lot of that, what he's been going through, is really kind of confirming everything that people thought was kind of a red flag in the first half of the year, as good as it was to see a 23, 24-year-old navigating through tough lineups, even without missing bats or even, working around traffic a little bit. I still think that he's healthy and, the raw stuff is there, but I would really like to see, some more consistency with the command that allows it to play up a bit more. He's really just not going to be able to walk four guys for nine at any point in his career and get away with it. He's talented, but no one's really that talented.
Since the middle of June with Giolito, I feel like there's been more good than bad, but it's still been, it's been rough to watch him at times. I see it. Like, I see what they see in him. Why is it not happening?
I don't know. Like, his last start he had to be the roughest start I've ever seen by anybody have 17 swinging strikes during. Like, he was
right.
Getting swings and misses on every off-speed pitch, but every time he kind of made a mistake on his fastball, he'd get hammered for it. And I think at this point, the league has kind of like expected the fact that he doesn't have the overwhelming life on the fastball that he had as a prospect or the command on it, and they just kind of sit on it. And they really feasted on anything that was even close to being a mistake on him. And I don't know what he can do to really sharpen that up other than just lean heavily, more heavily, and this is something he said himself, on his off-speed pitches, because he's got stuff. He's got swing and miss, benders. I wonder if he just needs to embrace it more fully. Like, James Shields at this point in his career doesn't even throw 40% fastballs. I don't know if that's an answer for Giolito or a path he can take, but you see the ability to spin a breaking ball, and maybe he just needs to lean on that as hard as he can, because it was weird to see him have as much swing and miss stuff as he did his last time out and still kind of get knocked around.
How seriously do I need to take Matt Davidson saying that he wants to be more involved in pitching?
Given the way Renneria reacted to it the next day, not very seriously at all.
Okay, good.
It doesn't sound like something that's under review in any serious way. It
was okay.
Like everyone had to laugh about it the next day. We really asked Renneria again. He kind of seemed like, oh, this is still a topic? No, we are not considering this, really.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. I just wanted to...
It'd be cool.
But it just seemed like, okay, he had a little bit of some success, and it... I'm like, oh, all right, that's adorable that he thinks that he's going to be a pitcher now, and he's not going to be a pitcher now.
Theoretically, someone who has not pitched in any competitive real way in 8 years, even if he's throwing flat ground sides in the meantime, would not be a successful reliever on a weekly basis.
Has he had fun with it, though?
He seems like he's having a blast.
Have you had fun watching position players pitch in American League games?
I have not had fun with the 8 innings that lead up to that situation for the payoff of the fun 9th inning.
Yeah, that is very much true. Well, James, as always, I appreciate the time and giving us information on what's going on with the White Sox. Do you expect anything to happen between now and the deadline expiring?
I wouldn't be shocked, but I don't see anything major like Avi or Abreu. The one trade I really thought was definitely going to happen by the deadline happened by the deadline already. So there's some small moves that could be made, but they could also happen in August. So I wouldn't be shocked to have a buzz on my phone tomorrow morning, but I'm not planning my whole day around it.
All right, James. Thanks. Tell everyone in the old country that I'm sorry.
I'll try. It's very loud on the other line that I have on hold.
Yeah, well, tell them I apologize. That was terrible, and I readily admit it. James, be good, man.
All right, take care.
James Fegan. Not Fagan. Joining, I don't even know why I'm doing that. That's ridiculous. It's really awful. It's cultural appropriation, and Honestly, I should know better. I should. This segment being brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. It's been a fun show tonight. If you missed it, Charles Tillman hijacked the show earlier. It'll be up on 670thescore.com/Lawrence Holmes show, I think. I think that's what it is. That's what it is, Irby?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just work here.
That's not true. That ain't true. I can tell you that this was supposed to be my only show of the week until Friday, but I think we're going to have a show tomorrow.
You looking at some radar or something?
Yeah, the Cubs are in Pittsburgh tomorrow, correct? Doesn't look good in Pittsburgh. But sometimes, though, like the I'll look at the weather forecast in a city and be like, oh, it's going to rain all day. I'm like, okay, we need to prep a show. And then it'll be 5:30, and tomorrow will be completely sunny in Pittsburgh. I know it's always sunny in Philadelphia, but maybe in Pittsburgh as well. But yeah, if it doesn't rain like enough to stop a baseball game, then I won't be on until Friday. Although I think Thursday I might do the show. I might. We'll see. We'll see how everything is situated in Canton. Canton's weird because that Thursday, right, 6:30. And maybe I think Shep's supposed to do that show.
He is.
But if I can find a working radio station in Canton, I'll probably do that show.
Shep's probably not going to open your mic up. Just like, nope, you're out. It's my
just
show now.
Just needs his time. He's on TV and stuff the last couple days, and he doesn't need me. But I'm going to be broadcasting, I believe, at the Holiday Inn in Canton.
You and Chingy?
I don't hang out with him anymore. He's always there, though. I can tell you that much.
He's only one call away.
Wow. You're the worst. The worst person. Jason Weaver never gets credit. So here's what I'm doing. I'm flying to Cleveland and then driving to Canton because there's no place to stay in Canton. I was looking at everything. And look, it's Hall of Fame weekend. It's not like I did this last week. Mitch told me a couple months ago that I was going to Canton, and I started looking for places then. I tried Airbnb. It was like, yeah, you can get this farmhouse for $500 a night. I'm like, wait, what? Score Budget is not going to allow me to do that. I'm still trying to get my expenses back from spring training. But I've never really like hung out. Well, there was a Bears-Browns game a few years ago that I covered. And was it called the Flats? Is that what it is by the stadium?
The Cleveland Flats, yeah.
Yeah. I hung out there a little bit. Didn't you like Cleveland other than there was no traffic?
No, Cleveland's trash.
Wow.
There's nothing in there.
No, Zach Morris is trash.
Like,
Zach Morris is trash.
That's the mark of a good city. If you have traffic. It was like drive time going into Cleveland. Nothing. Straight. Good.
Bourbonnais has traffic now because of construction. Are you saying Bourbonnais is great?
No, I'm not saying if you have traffic, you are a great city, but you have to have traffic if you want to be created, thought as a great city.
Wasn't there a restaurant that you guys went to that you enjoyed, though?
Yeah, Melt. We go to Melt every time we go that way. So when we went to Cooperstown, we all stopped right in Melt, and it's in Lakeview or Lakewood, which is like a suburb of Cleveland.
What's their specialty? They make grilled cheese or something?
Cheeses. Yeah, like what they put like meat in it, though. Real nice. Wow. Texas toast.
I had that this afternoon at home.
Yeah, but like it's the only thing they do in that city correctly, so we got to give them something. It was The first time we went was the summer after LeBron left. It was really depressing there. Then Tanny and I came back from Pittsburgh and went to Cleveland, and it's like the first time that LeBron had just announced that he is coming back to Cleveland. City was electric that day.
Was Cali there?
No, he was still in Minnesota, but yeah. Otherwise, Cleveland is trash. The Thirsty Parrot is garbage. The downtown area is boring. Joakim Noah said it all. I don't know if anybody's ever been out to Cleveland. I'm sure they're shaking their heads like, yes, there's nothing here.
Wow.
And I'm sure somebody from Cleveland is living in Chicago now. It's like, don't talk about my home city. It's like, where do you live now?
You didn't even make it to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No.
But Terry Hemmert's in there.
I mean, that's one reason to go, but otherwise, no.
Wow. This texter says, we made reservations for Canton in December. The closest hotel was a Holiday Inn a half an hour away. I know. That's why I'm staying. Cleveland's only like an hour away. So why not stay in Cleveland?
We stayed in the Dan Hampton Inn for $99. Downtown Cleveland.
I actually was texting with Hamp today. I was trying to get him on, but GM was like, you can't have Hamp on. I'm like, okay, I get it. But I mean, I only want to talk to him about Urlacher. It's not like I want to do like a Bears preview.
I can tell you how good Jim McMahon was. Or not.
He's got thoughts on it that a lot of Bears fans are not ready to hear. I can tell you that. Hamp is a firm believer that had Jay Cutler been the Bears quarterback back then, there'd be more than one Super Bowl shuffle. We'll talk with Nick Shepkowski. He had a big weekend this weekend. We'll explain why next here on The Score. Coming up after I am done, it will be Nick Shepkowski. He is wearing his Toronto Blue Jays cap. And why, Shep, would you be wearing a Toronto Blue Jays cap?
Because my blue eyes pop when you put a Toronto Blue Jays hat on me. No, that's not the case. That's not the reason that I went to Lids and was asked, oh, what team are you looking for? And I said, Blue Jays. And the man said, that's not a team that's asked about often in these parts. That was the one right in front of work down here about a month or so ago. No, I'm wearing a Blue Jays hat because my wife's first cousin, Ryan Barucki from Mundelein, he product from Mundelein High School, pitched yesterday for the Toronto Blue Jays at Guaranteed Rate Field. Went six innings strong, allowed two runs, and now six starts into his big league career. Five quality starts, two of those looked good again yesterday. Blue Jays came back for the victory. The only problem with it was scored their runs too late. Still trying to get a W for the kid.
Where did you guys go to watch him? Was it Milwaukee, or did you guys go to Toronto?
No, we went to Houston.
Houston, that's where he went.
We got called up. We got the call on a Sunday morning. It was during Pride Week, Pride Day, I should say, because we were leaving to go to that. And as we're getting in the car.
Oh, that's right. I saw you guys there.
And my wife comes running into the house screaming. And the only thing you think when you hear it is like, oh, my God, what happened? What the heck is going on? What's the matter? Like, what? I can't. What are you saying? You're yelling. Ryan got called up. He's starting in Houston Tuesday. And I'm like, wait a minute. Wait, hold up. Wait, what? And we decided long ago when he got the call or if he ever got the call, whether it was Houston, Seattle, New York, Tampa, Miami, whatever corner of the country that it might have been in, we are going to go. Just turns out that it happened to be Houston 2 days after that. So we spent all of Sunday pretty much looking for flights. Finally found some semi-affordable ones on Spirit, flew out Tuesday morning, went and enjoyed Houston for the day, went to the game, watched him pitch well in that contest, went out, got dinner with him and his folks and some of the family and friends that were down there afterwards, got on the 6 a.m. flight back the next day, and I was at work that afternoon.
This is a kid who grew up idolizing Mark Burley.
Yeah, and he looks just like him, too, when he throws.
Where's 56?
Yes, he wears 56. He's left-handed, and he throws a changeup a lot. He doesn't shake off his catcher a whole heck of a lot. But, like, if you watch his delivery.
I mean, if there's a template you want to follow, it's a pretty good template if you're a lefty.
If you're not throwing 97 or 98 with any regularity, like, that's a pretty good formula for success. And he has done it extremely well so far. And that's like everyone, oh, he doesn't have a big-time fastball. Yeah, but he gets out of pitch. He gets out of sequence. He gets out of throw off eye levels. And he's done a great job of that so far. And mean, it's for an otherwise pretty forgettable Blue Jays team right now, that's a bright spot for them. It's a bright spot for really the Chicagoland community when you see one of your own go out and do a hell of a job.
Did I meet this kid at your wedding?
Was he there? Was there. He was the one that was dancing his rear end off the Backstreet Boys.
Oh,
so he was like
yeah.
the 6'4 guy that stuck out that was fist pumping the Backstreet Boys throughout the night. That was him.
Huh.
So I don't know if you met him, but I'm sure you saw him.
I'm sure I met him because I kind of met everybody at the mm-hmm. wedding. And we were at table 83, which was
nice. He would
have
been right
done
with one of his, let's see, it would have been 2 years ago now. Would have been just finished his minor league season that year because it would have been the second weekend of September. So his regular season would have been done end of August. So he would have been fresh back from that.
Huh.
Well, yeah, he was there.
That's great. Congratulations to him. That's
awesome.
Big deal.
It's also cool because his dad's also a P1 to this radio station, Ray. But he was very close to being a pro. He was a pro. Very close to getting the call to the big leagues. Never got past AAA, though. Played in the Phillies system for years. Played in the Tigers system. Never got called up. But it was pretty cool when we were in Houston because after the game, Ryan came into the restaurant that we were at, and we're sitting in the back, and he gave his dad the ball from his first strikeout.
Wow.
And he's like, hey, you were my coach. You were my best friend. Hands him the ball. I mean, both of them are just like waterworks, and understandably so. But that was cool to watch. It's been awesome because it's just like I don't want to go all David Stein here and celebrate life through sports, but it's funny.
No one gets that reference except for me. I appreciate it.
There's probably like two people out there that do. But
tell me something good about your life, brother.
It's just cool when you have, like, it's literally baseball. It's a left-handed 6'4 kid from the area throwing a baseball extremely well, but how it brings a family together, how it brings a community together. One of the coolest things of yesterday was, yeah, it's awesome when you see him out there on a field that you've grown up going to. You've been going to the last 20-plus years. You're like, wow, I actually know the dude that's out there throwing. I drove him back to his hotel room last night. He was in the back of our car, and we drove him back to the team hotel last night. He's out there throwing. That's crazy. But maybe the coolest part of all of it was like you saw the kids from Mundelein wearing Mundelein High School t-shirts.
Were like 150 kids
at
or whatever?
And I think that's being conservative. It was a ton. But you see them run up after the game. And I mean, it looked like the mayor walked in essentially when he came out of the media section at Guaranteed Rate Field. And he walks out of those doors and he gets like a rousing ovation from all these teenagers wearing bright red shirts, Mundelein shirts. It was cool to see and be a very, very, I mean, when I say I was a small part of, a very small part of, but it was fun to take in, and it's something it's real hard to describe kind of how it is watching someone at that level that you know and have a connection to, because it's as nerve-wracking as watching if your favorite team's in a playoff game. Like, you sit there and your stomach it's just a pit the entire time he's pitching. And it's just like, oh my God, just get out of this. This is horrible. This is not enjoyable. And he gets out of it and you're like, this is the best thing ever. Oh my God, I can't wait for him to throw again. Then he goes back out there next inning and it's like, oh my God, just get out of this. God, I'm ready to puke. Get me a bucket. But it's so hard to describe because I don't have really anything else I can even compare it to.
Does the wife have any athletic ability? I don't know if we've ever discussed this. I don't know if I've ever asked her that.
Mine?
Yes.
Some. She's a big runner. Huge
oh, yeah, that's
runner.
Right. She runs. That's right.
She was a soccer player. Soccer player and runner. Then dance teams as well.
Okay, so a lot of athletic ability.
Yeah.
Okay. I never think of Ashley in athletic context because she's kind of got a boss thing going on.
Well, I mean, she is probably the most competitive person I know. And I know a lot of competitive people because I work here where everyone is
pretty
trying to one-up the other.
So darts.
But that's when we first started dating. We'd go out and play shuffleboard at the bar.
Wait, what? But how old are you two?
How old?
You're playing shuffleboard together?
Not like the actual, not like shuffleboard.
Are you guys getting on
in your Florida retirement home? Like shuffleboard,
you guys, like,
the
went
bar
on a date
shuffleboard.
On a cruise and decided
yes.
to play shuffleboard?
No, like the shuffleboard at a bar, not the shuffleboard in the backyard of a retirement community.
I didn't know.
But we would do that, and I mean, like two stubborn jerks that we both
are.
Like it would be smack talking.
Yeah, because you're not competitive at all.
Right, but like, and I will say, I can beat her ass in damn near everything competitive that we do. Shuffleboard, she's in my head. She messes with me. I'm a head case when I play her in shuffleboard. She beats the hell out of me to this day.
Well, that's good news. I like that she gets to win occasionally.
Occasionally. She wins in life and she wins in shuffleboard. Everything else competitive, I beat her in, though.
I think I did. I didn't do Spot Hero, Mike Chang. You're 100% right. I should never doubt you again. This segment is brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users get in a promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. All right, Shep, what are you going to do on the show tonight?
Do you see this news? There's a certain someone that has apparently been made available by the Washington Nationals, which is, I guess I'd still be shocked if it happened, but the fact that it's gotten to this point.
That Bryce Harper is now available? Cubbies!
They are taking calls
White
on
Sox.
Bryce Harper.
Let's go, White
Man,
Sox!
There's so much to discuss with that from a Cubs angle, and if you want to do the Sox thing, not so much as
no,
a rental.
He's not.
There's so much to take from it.
I mean, the White Sox have Adam Engel.
That's right. So why would you want Bryce Harper, some 215 hitter?
The White Sox have Avi Garcia playing right field. They don't need Bryce Harper.
You're blocked, Harper.
Yeah.
Get that batting average up, bum.
Maybe DH. Maybe we can find a place for him at DH.
Range is too low.
Jeez.
So I want to get into that.
He's got a dog named Addison.
No, he's got a dog named Wrigley.
Whatever. Doesn't matter. Whatever, what around the ballpark BS. He's friends with Chris Bryant. Kinda. They played ball together.
Take awkward photos in Los Angeles Golden Knights jerseys together.
Las Vegas.
Los Angeles.
Same thing.
It's all the
matter.
Same. It's a West Coast town. Not even coast.
I believe Las Vegas is farther west than portions of Los Angeles.
Is it really?
I think, or maybe I'm thinking Reno. Maybe it's Reno that
Probably
I'm thinking
Reno.
Of. That
yeah.
Reno is farther west than Los Angeles is.
That would make sense.
I think that's
would,
right.
Yeah.
Weird Nevada
Just
trivia.
Playing up the map in my head. That would make
it
more
curves.
Sense.
Curves.
Right, because Reno's more north. America's biggest small town.
I've never been.
Neither have I.
I enjoy Reno 911.
Never been to Vegas either, though.
You've never been to Vegas?
No. Joe yells at me about this all the time. I'm like, Joe, if I go to Vegas, I'm not coming home.
Considering the show that you work on, you'll be in Vegas soon.
I understand that. But you also, I don't know if it's a place I need to go to.
You don't.
Because
Ever.
What's available there is already available online.
It's
if
different.
If you want to. I'm sure the live action of it is.
It's different.
But it almost feels like it's like amateur hour. Everything you hear, go to the NCAA tournament where all your 21-year-olds are on spring break.
Yeah, I don't think that you
I'm
should
getting
go
old,
for that.
Man. I'm not the young guy anymore.
I actually think that you and Ashley should go. And I think that you should do what I do, which is you get a little bit of the strip life and then head out to Red Rock or Blue Diamond and go hiking.
Yeah. She would especially like that part.
It's actually great. It's great.
Cleansing for the soul.
I find it that way.
You a big hiker? I know every time you're in Arizona, I remember seeing the pictures.
Arizona, Nevada, I'll go hiking. I actually really love...
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.